All right, welcome to Making the Argument. Before we get started, I have a very important announcement. We have a brand new deal with GoodRanchers.com. That's right. If you go into Good Ranchers and you use promo code Nick and you sign up for one of their subscriptions, you're not only going to get $15 off, but do you remember the old deal where you got 2 pounds of ground beef with each order? Well, we just upped the game. That's right. You can choose top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, or bacon now. Every single order you get on that subscription is going to come with free top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, or bacon. You get to choose which one if you use promo code Nick. And again, $15 off on top of that. That's a savings of $480 in meat by signing up for one of those subscriptions. Not to mention the fact that if you are looking for a gift for someone that is impossible to shop for, you can go on to goodranchers.com and get one of their brand new gift boxes. Now, this is a limited time only offer. It's part of their overall Black Friday special. So go on to goodranchers.com to get more details. Sign up for promo code Nick in order to get that deal, and let's get on with the show.
Hi, this is Nick Freitas, and welcome to Making the Argument, the podcast and YouTube channel with all of your Making the Argument needs. Today, we're going to be talking about following the science, because I have to tell you, after coming out of legislative session this last couple months in the Virginia General Assembly, what I heard a lot coming from the other side of the aisle was that they're the party of science, they follow the science, and apparently the rest of us are all just a bunch of, you know, mystics reading horoscopes in order to decide what to do next. And it was incredibly frustrating. And I want to talk a little bit today on what do we mean when we say follow the science, and specifically, what does the left seem to mean when they say follow the science? Because there's a difference here. So let's start off with what science is not. Okay, science is not a person or an institution, all right? Just because a scientist says something doesn't mean that it's automatically true or automatically accurate. In fact, that's a wholly unscientific way to go about analyzing the information, data, or conclusions that somebody is putting forward, all right? Science is a process, it's a method whereby we look at observable reality and we come to conclusions, right? So I want to share a story. During the 2020 election cycle, I had a reporter come up to me and this is going to come as a shock, but clearly this reporter was not a fan of Donald Trump, right? I know, right? Stop clutching your pearls. He wasn't a fan of Donald Trump. And he was asking me these questions about the pandemic. He was asking me the questions about COVID and the different things that we should follow. And of course, the question came up of following the science. And so I decided to do something differently here. And I looked back at the reporter. I said, well, can you tell me what you think science is? Right? And you would have thought I asked some off-the-wall weird question. Right, because of course we all know what science is. Okay, great, if we all know, what's science? Explain it to me. Because again, the way I understand science is it's a method, it's a process. And so if you wanna know what a virus is going to do, well then you might ask a group of virologists and they may conduct various studies and collect data and analyze and they were probably in a good position to tell you what a virus will do. If you wanna know about a pandemic, you might talk to an epidemiologist and they can give you insight based off of their education and research on what will happen during a pandemic, all right? And that's all great. That's all important. That's necessary. We want that as part of the conversation. But that doesn't make them public policy experts. Them being able to tell you what a virus will do doesn't necessarily tell us what as a society we should do or specifically what the government should do about it. I mean, if you want that, if you want to follow a scientific process, well, then you start bringing in logisticians. Right? Because obviously if you have a virus and you're going to develop a vaccine, well, you need different people that are going to develop the vaccine. You need different people that are going to distribute the vaccine. If you want to learn how lockdowns are going to potentially affect the economy, well, then you might want to talk to an economist. You might want to talk to people to deal with mental health issues or addiction issues because there's going to be additional problems associated with a lockdown. So if you're following the science, it's not just about finding a couple or a group of experts about a particular thing and then saying, okay, now we have all the information necessary in order to make public policy. It's about getting subject matter experts in a wide array of fields. And then it's also about looking at extensive data, not just the data points that justify your particular bias, but looking at all the data points or as many data points as we can possibly get together in order to make a decision in a timely and relevant manner, right? That's I'm looking back at him, and again, it's almost as if I'm speaking a foreign language to him on what science is. And then I went to go through so what happened at the beginning of this pandemic? Because I'm old enough to remember that when this was first hitting and Donald Trump was putting in things like travel bans and advising people of the potential danger of this, Nancy Pelosi, Bill de Blasio, Chuck Schumer, they were all filmed in the middle of street festivals, encouraging everyone to get out. Don't let Donald Trump ruin your fun. We're having a great time at this street festival in San Francisco or in New York City. So come on down. Were they following the science at that point? Right. But again, we conveniently leave that out, or they conveniently leave that out when they're actually talking about how we address things like the pandemic. So let's go into the pandemic science. Again, there's a number of things, and I'm just using the pandemic as one example. We're actually going to talk about some other examples here of when the left instructed us to follow the science, and it sometimes it yielded horrible consequences as a result from a public policy perspective. I've already said, when this first started and Donald Trump was putting in travel bans, you saw a lot of these left-wing politicians basically telling people to ignore it. All right, so again, were they following the science at that point? But then we also had the World Health Organization. I remember when the World Health Organization was tweeting out, based off of data they got from the communist Chinese government, saying that the propensity for this to spread from person to person was incredibly low. Oh, really? Well, how did that work out? How did that work out? Should we have followed the science that the World Health Organization was putting out at that particular time and just, I mean, not done anything? Because after all, the science was telling us that this had a low propensity for person-to-person transmission. Right? So what science do you want to follow at that particular point in time? And do you want to leave that decision up to a centralized government authority that will just decide for all of us? Or do you want to put information out to the public and allow them to be able to decide for themselves? All right, so you know, another thing that I find interesting is the more draconian the government lockdown, the more they try to base it off of, well, we're just following the science. Okay, well, now that we've established that they are picking and choosing which science to follow, maybe we should also look at what I talked about earlier. When you look at a particular problem and you want to take a scientific approach to it, again, you don't just get the virologist, the epidemiologist, to look at the pandemic. You look at all of the other factors that are going to be affected as a result of the public policy that you put out. So if you're going to do an incredibly stringent lockdown, that's going to have factors beyond what you just intend. Obviously, your intention at there might be entirely noble. You might just say, you know what, this pandemic is spreading. The World Health Organization was wrong. We now know better. And so we're going to do some lockdowns. Okay, well, great. You're going to do lockdowns. And your idea behind that is we're going to prevent the spread by diminishing people's ability or desire to go out and mingle with other people, whether it be in economic activity or social activity or whatever else it is. Okay, what are the potential downsides of that policy? Well, we've already seen it in an increase in drug overdoses. We've seen it in an increase with respect to domestic violence. We've seen it with an increase with respect to mental health issues. So if you're looking at this scientifically, you're going to take into account all of the negative effects that are inherent to COVID-19, to the pandemic. Then you're also going to look at the negative effects as a result of public policy that is directed at addressing COVID-19. And you're going to try to find out, like, okay, we know that there's bad things happening on both sides of this. One is a direct relation to the pandemic. One is in direct relation to our response to the pandemic, right? How do we mitigate this? But no. It's just, if you're locking everything down, you care about people. And if you're not locking everything down, clearly you don't care about Corona, right? Again, complete false dichotomy. It's this either or proposition that doesn't seem to add up or work well for anybody. And in fact, again, let's go ahead and follow the science here, because I want to read a quote for you. This was a Nobel Prize laureate, Michael Levitt, and he said this. He goes, "There is no doubt in my mind that when we come to look back on this, the damage done by lockdown will exceed any savings of life by a huge factor." Right? Not by a little bit, by a huge factor. And we've already seen this. You even had the World Health Organization coming out later saying, look, these extreme lockdowns are not beneficial. All right? The cost-benefit analysis doesn't add up. But did that prevent different state governments or different politicians from advocating and enforcing stringent lockdowns? Nope. So were they following the science at that point? I mean, I don't know. The World Health Organization has been wrong before. It's been right before. The question is what data points were they using at that particular time? Did we have enough to say that if you engage in extreme lockdown, the benefit that you gain from that does not outweigh the costs associated with it? I would argue that we did. I would argue that adds up logically, and I would argue that it also adds up with respect to the data that we were able to collect at that point when that information was put out. But did that knock, you know, certain governors off course with respect to the lockdowns? Of course not. They seem to really enjoy the idea of being able to tell everybody what they can and cannot do, what businesses can stay open and what businesses can't stay open. And we're going to talk about some of the motivation behind that, because I don't think it's exclusively motivated by either combating COVID-19 or by following the science. I think in some cases we've got a good argument to make that they are selectively using science when it suits their purpose to achieve objectives that they already wanted in the first place. All right, but let's move on to some other examples. All right, because this isn't the first time that the left or the progressive movement have told us that they're just following the science, and because they follow the science, because they're the party of science, therefore the government should respond in the ways that they think are appropriate. So I'm gonna read off some things from the early 20th century, right? And we don't even gotta go back that far, but these are some of the most egregious cases that I think people should be aware of whenever you hear someone just arrogantly telling you they're following the science, all right? All right, so I'm gonna read this off for you. Harvard professor Robert DeCourcy Ward, all right, 1867 to 1931, is credited with holding the first chair of climatology in the United States. He was a consummate member of the academic establishment. He was the editor of the American Meteorological Journal, president of the Association of American Geographers, and a member of both the American Academy of Arts and Sciences and the Royal Meteorological Society of London. All right, so, I mean, look, he's got the credentials, right? Harvard professor. I want to read for you some things he used to say, because he was also an avowed eugenicist that was very concerned, right? And for anybody on the left that might want to cut up this podcast and try to make it look like I'm saying this, let me just make this very obvious. I am quoting what this champion of progressivism and science at the time had to say, because he was really worried about the mixing of American Anglo-Saxon blood. So here we go. Ready? Ward explained that the United States had a remarkably favorable opportunity for practicing eugenic principles. So along with everything else he was doing with science, he was really applying, you know, his version of science to the whole process of eugenics. But it goes on. And he said there was a desperate need to do so, because already we have no hundreds of thousands, but millions, in his words, of Italians and Slavs and Jews whose blood is going into the new American race. This trend could cause Anglo-Saxon America to disappear. Without eugenic policy, the new American race will not be a better, stronger, more intelligent race, but rather a weak and possibly degenerate mongrel. So you want to follow that science? Because this is not a one-off quote. You go look at the progressive era, you go look at what the left was pushing at this time in the name of progressivism, and you go look at the policies that were actually instituted as a result of politicians following this kind of science. Whether it was economic policy, whether it was social policy, educational policy, you go look at the tens of thousands of people that were forced into forced sterilization by their government because progressive scientists like this one said that it was necessary in order to protect the American gene pool. Yeah, that's your science being followed right there. Right, and I struggle to say that, because this isn't following science. This is following a particular scientific trend by a group of scientists. Now, they were prominent and they were well-respected. They had all the nice little titles. They had all the little letters by their name that they needed in order to be taken seriously within scientific communities. But were they right? No. Not only were they right, that's racist and immoral. But if you're just going to say following the science is the criteria, and if following the science means nothing more than taking what prominent scientists happened to be saying at the time and adding it up with how well it coincided with what progressives wanted to do in the first place, all of a sudden, if you're disagreeing with this, now you're a science denier. All right, let's look at some others. In 1931, there was a book published called 100 Authors Against Einstein, which featured scientists declaring that Einstein's theory of relativity was wrong. Right now, if that sounds a little bit like people quoting to you, 98% of scientists agree, it's somewhat similar, right? Well, 100 scientists are all saying that he's wrong. Einstein responded by saying, I love this quote, when Einstein was confronted with this, he said, why 100? If I were wrong, one would have been enough, right? Because that's how science works. And Einstein actually understood it. That science requires a healthy degree of skepticism, right? What about some other examples? How about when the U.S. government dietary guidelines encourage people to eat more carbs and less fats? You remember the little food pyramid we all saw in elementary school? Yeah, it turns out they've had to come back later and say, yeah, no, that's kind of garbage. right? There's some aspects of truth to it, but there's a lot of other things that are problematic about that particular food pyramid. Well, wasn't it just following the science? Yeah, some scientists completely agreed with it. There were certainly people within the agricultural industry that liked certain aspects of that food pyramid better than other parts. And since some of this science was being funded by government dollars, well, I guess you got the conclusion that the politicians wanted. And they were foisting that upon people. We were all just supposed to believe it because, after all, the FDA was putting this out. Department of Agriculture was putting this out. And they were just following the science. All right, let's look at another one. Because what do you really mean when you're following the science? So Neil deGrasse Tyson, I think, was actually pretty honest about what he wanted. He came up, and I'm going to read this off. It was he suggested something called a rationalia style of government where all policies would be based on the weight of evidence. Right now, that sounds pretty reasonable. Right now, his version of this is that whenever you have a particular question, you're just going to throw a bunch of scientists at it, and whatever conclusion they come up to, that's what you're going to base your policy on. Now, let me be clear. Basing public policy off of scientific findings is not in and of itself a bad thing, provided that you've taken into account diverse opinions, perspectives, and diverse data and subject matter expertise so that you can actually have a comprehensive view of how that policy is going to work in reality. Not just what the stated intentions are, not just what the desire of the scientist is, but what we know about human history and everything else. How is it actually going to work, and is it going to achieve those results? And Neil deGrasse Tyson seemed to think that, well, gosh, as long as you put scientists in charge of it, then you know, of course it will. All right? Now, there was an article in Popular Science that responded to this. And I want to read this off for you because I think this is important. Here's what the article said. Scientists study what they want, and they study what they can get paid to study. So the work of science is not free from the pressures of money, nor interaction with the business world, and I would argue also with the political world. In a hypothetical world where a single person, let's call him Neil, decided policy based on precisely measuring the weight of evidence, how that person selected evidence would matter a great deal and would likely come down to values. Oh my gosh, look at that. So you're telling me that simply because someone has scientist in their title, simply because scientist appears on their business card, that they're also subjected to values, to biases, which inform the way that they look at data? Well, of course they are. Now, does a good scientist try to go through a proper method of assuring that they're guarding against bias confirmation? Absolutely. But you want to know one of the ways they do that? They open up their data and their findings to other scientists, and not just other scientists, but other people that are clearly capable of using scientific methodology, rationale, the laws of logic, in order to analyze it to determine whether or not they came to the correct conclusion, and then also determine whether or not the conclusions they came to can effectively inform policy in a way that will achieve desired results. But the idea that the moment you have scientist in the title, you're no longer affected by, oh, I don't know, let's say a huge government grant to your school that wants you to study something, and you know, as you're conducting these studies, you know that the politicians that are allocating these funds have pretty much already come up to the conclusion of what it is that they want. You don't think that affects your findings? I mean, it would be nice to assume that it doesn't, but I'm not exactly ready to hand over all of my freedom and decision-making power to a government agency simply because they found a scientist to confirm what they wanted to do in the first place. All right. All of this to say that, you know, is science good or bad? The scientific method is a good thing, all right? But it's just that, it's a method. It's a process, okay? So let's look at what the scientific method is, all right? A good scientific method starts with asking a question, all right, or observing some sort of phenomenon. Then you conduct background research on it, right? So you study the phenomenon, or you study different articles with respect to the question that you're trying to answer. Then you form a hypothesis. All right, I think that this is a certain way, and I think if we do this or we don't do this, then such and such a thing will happen, right? You form a hypothesis. Then you conduct tests. You run different experiments, right? You might be able to do some of these experiments in a lab. You might have to do some of them, you know, more from a sociological perspective. You might, you know, have different people come in, ask them questions, see what the responses are. But you conduct tests, all right, that actually has data that you can measure, all right? After you get all that, you analyze your data, So you do your research, and then you determine whether or not your hypothesis was accurate, was it inaccurate, was it partially accurate, does it need to be adjusted, should more tests be conducted? And once you've done all that, you form a conclusion, right? And once you've formed your conclusion, you share the results. Now, this part's important, because sharing results within a scientific framework is not just saying, hey, I did all this research, and this is my conclusion, so therefore, agree with me. It's about sharing both your conclusion and the data, the research, and the testing that went along to help you form that conclusion. Here's what's one of the things that's really interesting with some of the science we're supposed to follow, especially when it comes to things like climate change modeling. You'll see all these dire predictions coming out, and then when other scientists say, okay, I see your conclusion, but I want to look at your data, the scientists will come back and say, well, no, you don't get my data. That's not scientific. That's saying, hey, trust me, I figured it out, do what I want. That's not scientific. So just as important as sharing your conclusions is sharing the data that help you get to those conclusions in the first place so that other people, to include other scientists, can do a rigorous test of that data to determine whether or not the conclusions you come to are based off of the data or some sort of implicit bias that you had. Right? But again, many of our political leaders don't seem to be interested in questioning results when those results achieve what they wanted in the first place. So let's look at this. Because here's what I think is specifically interesting in our current climate. If you really want to follow the science and you really want to believe in science and you really want the process to be open and accurate and yield to results, which we can then all use to make better decisions, the best way to do that is to foster an environment of freedom of inquiry. That's it. You gotta have an environment where scientists are not scared or afraid to share results that might run against politically convenient narratives. But if you're not willing to do that, well, then you don't really love science and you don't really love the scientific method. You just like using the word science in order to buttress your argument. Agree with me because I'm the party of science. Agree with me because I'm following the science. Show me your data. The most scientific thing you can do in that point is say, show me the data. And then look at other approaches to that data. Or look at data that they used versus data that they chose to exclude. All right, so let's get back to what the scientific method is. All right, again, I'll read this off. Because I think that it's not that the left isn't using science. And I'm making a differentiation here between the left and liberals. Because right, I've got liberal friends who I may disagree with on policy, but they do rigorously try to apply the scientific method, right? When they come up with a conclusion, they don't yell at me or scream at me or tell me that I'm wrong and I'm not following the science because I disagree with them, right? They just believe that science is led in a particular direction and they're very open to having an honest debate about it. But there's another form of utilizing the scientific method that is ultimately unscientific, right? And this is the way I think some people on the left, again, not necessarily liberals, but on the left, use the scientific method. Here's the question they start off with. How do I get reelected or accumulate more power and control? Right? So that's their question. What's the background research? Well, they conduct research that demonstrates that using the term science or giving your philosophy the thin intellectual veneer of scientific plausibility gives it weight in the public mind. Right? So the question was, how do I accumulate more power? Their background research showed that using the word science and attaching it onto your beliefs can actually help you get your policies pushed forward. So the hypothesis is if you can convince people that the government having more power will benefit the public will gladly surrender essential liberties in return for the promise of security. That's your hypothesis. The testing includes convincing people that freedom is a burden and what they really want is free stuff and to be absolved of responsibility for their own actions and to feel safe. All right, so those are the tests you're going to conduct. Right, what sort of policies that you can put out there that demonstrate whether or not your conclusion, but your hypothesis is accurate. All right, so once you conduct all that testing, you come back and the conclusion is using tax dollars to fund scientific research will come to the desired conclusions of those politicians who want power and will achieve the desired result, right? So that's the conclusion. Again, they follow the scientific. Question was, how do I get power? Hypothesis was, if I can convince people and I can use the word science to convince people that government having more power is good for them is great. Testing included looking at ways to actually convince the public that freedom was a burden to them. Conclusions come. Hey, let's use tax dollars in order to fund scientific research that will render the conclusions we want to push the policies we prefer. Next question is do they actually share their conclusions and their data? Not really. Not really. I mean, if you're going to share your conclusions and your data on a question like that, you better be really careful on how you do it. Better be really careful on how you do it. But if you use that process, and again, this is the way I think when the left talks about following the science, I think they have followed the science in that particular instance. That they have gone through a logical thought process of determining how the word science can be used to manipulate, or even how government-funded scientific research can be used to manipulate the public into surrendering essential liberty in favor of government power and control, because that's going to make them safer. And if you don't believe that, you must be a science denier. So what's the takeaway from all of this? Is science is a good thing. Right? Let's just be very blunt about that. The scientific method is a wonderful tool that we can use to make observations about observable reality in order to come to logical conclusions about why things happen and potentially what we should do about certain things. And that scientific method is neither left-wing nor right-wing. It just is what it is. It's a method. But more and more, what we are seeing right now is the good name of science being used as a tool of propaganda. And what is the purpose of propaganda? Again, it's not to inform. The purpose of propaganda is to intimidate and humiliate. It's not there to foster additional debate or discussion. It's there to shut it down. And so anytime you hear someone on the left talking about how much they love science or talking about the science being settled on a particular issue, the question I want you to ask them right off the bat is, describe the scientific method for me. Because I think you will be shocked at how many people claim to love science, the same people that opine on everything within the realm of politics, who claim to love science, who cannot even tell you the basic structure of the scientific method, the very building block upon which scientific research is based. Now, before you ask that question, one bit of advice. You better know what the scientific method is before you ask, because if they turn around and ask you and you don't know, well, you end up looking just as foolish, right? But understand that. Ask that question. So when your kid comes home from college and starts talking about following the science, ask them what the scientific method is. If they know what the scientific method is, great. Now start to ask them, what sort of data was included in your research? What sort of data was excluded in your research? Was that data presented, or were those findings presented by someone that was an expert, not only in the field they were discussing, but if there's actually a public policy approach assigned or attached to this conclusion, are they a subject matter expert in public policy? Did they look at all the other data that would actually go into determining whether or not the public policy would achieve the desired results? If they didn't, well, we got a problem. And now we're no longer talking about the realm of science. We're talking about the realm of political theory. So just a couple guidelines. You know, hopefully you find this helpful when you're discussing the whole topic of science. But one thing I don't want to see conservatives do is losing faith in the method. Right? If you've lost faith in the media's ability to report about science, I'm right there with you. If you're skeptical of politicians that come forward and attempt to use science as a bludgeon to get you to do what they want you to do without accepting any sort of skepticism about either their plans or the data that they're using, then yes, continue in that skepticism. That is a healthy, scientific way to go about it. But ultimately, science is not the enemy. And the biggest thing that we need to take away, the biggest thing that we need to remember about all of this is that anybody that attempts to use science as a way to accumulate massive amounts of government power so they can force you to do what they want is ultimately creating an environment where science cannot flourish. Because as I said earlier, science is built upon the idea of sound methodology and freedom of inquiry. All right, I want to thank you for joining us on Making the Argument. Again, we've just been really excited about all the people that have tuned in on the podcast, that have watched on the YouTube channel. If you like this, share it with a friend, right? Share it with a friend, share it on social media, but always, always, always go on, write us a 5-star review. Let us know what you're thinking. Give us feedback for future episodes that you would like to see. Once again, thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time.
Once again, thank you very much for listening. If you want to support the show, again, one of the best ways you can do it is by heading over to goodranchers.com with promo code Nick. You're going to get $15 off. You sign up for one of those subscriptions and you're going to get up to $480 of free meat with that subscription. You get to pick top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, bacon. It is all up to you. Plus, if you're looking for gifts to get for the people that are impossible to shop for, goodranchers.com also has gift boxes. You need to act quick. This is part of their overall Black Friday special. So head on over to goodranchers.com, use promo code Nick, and once again, thank you for listening.